Agenda item number seven, public hearing to discuss the set aside for approximately 805 acres of water bottom in Cobb Bay in that vicinity. Mr. Stat, Mr. Badger.
I know we look alike.
Mr. Badger.
And we get,
right.
We get,
Mr. Badger, will you do us all a favor here today and shout?
I'd like to, see if we couldn't turn the volume up a little bit.
Kathy, can we turn the volume of the speaker up a little bit?
I'm just glad I wasn't here last month and having to speak when there was no PA system at all. Okay, this is a public hearing to set aside, not to be leased, approximately 805 acres of unassigned state bottom in Cobb Bay, adjacent to and south of Public Ground 13, and approximately 963 acres in South Bay, adjacent to and east of Public Ground 30 in Northampton County. The areas are identified as suitable for submerged aquatic vegetation, SAV growth and restoration. This is just an overview showing the lower part of the eastern shore. Okay. Cobb Bay, South Bay, Chardon, Cape Charles. Another view. Normally what you would do is you'd go to Oyster and go on out and then take either go to the south or go to the north to get to these areas. There are small channels leading down into South Bay. Most of the area is less than 4 feet in elevation or depth. Cobb Bay is deeper until you get up towards where we're discussing setting these areas aside. And up in these areas, it's about 4 feet or less. Just to give you a little bit of history, and this goes back to what we talked about back in October. In 1933, the coastal bays on the eastern shore supported large amounts of submerged aquatic vegetation, primarily eelgrass. The significance of these eelgrass beds were noted in the bay scallop population, which was commercially harvested at that time. The commission set aside public scallop grounds in these bays in the late 20s, 1920s. And in the early 30s, the combination of disease and the 1933 hurricane wiped out the entire population of eelgrass in the coastal bays on the eastern shore of Virginia, along with the bay scallops, which use eelgrass as a sediment substrate. In 2001 and 2006, the commission set aside eelgrass restoration area in South Bay for 727.85 acres, and again in 2005 the commission set aside 507.9 acres in Hog Island Bay. According to VIMS, of the 380 acres that has been planted in eelgrass over the past 11 years has now spread to over 4,700 acres in four adjacent bays, making this the largest and most successful eelgrass restoration project on Earth. Along with the eelgrass, VIMS has introduced the bay scallop in these eelgrass beds. Between 2013 and 2014, the number of adult scallops found in one large eelgrass bed where scallop restoration efforts are ongoing jumped from 29,000 to 113,000 scallops. The continued success of the bay scallop restoration effort is dependent upon maintaining these SAV beds on which the scallops depend. What we're here to do today is have a public hearing on setting aside these four areas. One in Cobb Bay, and also they consider this Spotted Crab Bay is up in here, and three areas down in South Bay. As you can see, the eelgrass is in the lighter color now. Existing eelgrass is in the lighter green, these areas. And this is also the set-aside area in South Bay already. That's a 700-some acre piece there. VIMS is expecting the SAV to spread, the eelgrass to spread into the darker green areas, these areas, and also into the public grounds behind it. A little closer view. Again, the lighter color green is existing, and the potential is the darker color. Most of it will be in the public grind system, but a good portion of it here would be outside in vacant, unassigned bottom. Again, down in South Bay, yellow, lighter color is existing, a darker color is expected to expand into. And you can see there's also some, I guess, yeah, that's yellow. These are existing leases that we have now. Currently, SAV covers approximately 4.7% of underwater lands of the seaside of the Eastern Shore, and according to Vins, it is only has the potential to spread naturally to another 5% and only in a few particular areas. This analysis was presented to the Commission at their January 2014 meeting, resulting in the Commission requesting recommendations for new SAV set-aside areas on the seaside. The recommended SAV areas are a result of the Commission's request in collaboration with VIMS, VMRC, Virginia's Coastal Zone Management Program, and the ACMAC Northampton PTC. The Commission at its October 28, 2014 meeting approved staff's request to have a public hearing on the SAV set-aside area at their January, or at this meeting, January 27th. Staff notified nearby Oyster Grind leaseholders in both Cobb Bay and South Bay of the proposed set-aside area request, and a public notice was run in the local paper. We did receive one phone call from RNC Seafood, Chuck Churn, who has leases in South Bay. They did have concerns that the set-aside areas would be treated as a sanctuary where the public would not be excluded from harvesting clams of oysters. And up until last night, we had not received any other protests. However, we did receive a protest from the Shellfish Growers of Virginia that we received last night, and it's in your packet at the very end, the letter is. But basically, they believe that the vacant unassigned bottom should not be set aside just because of the potential for the SAV spreading into these areas. They believe that VMRC already has the regulations and authority to protect submerged aquatic vegetation from their leasing program. That has not changed any of our recommendations or anything, but that's all better bring it up. Anyway, our recommendations, the intent of the proposed set-aside areas is to prevent potential future conflicts regarding lease requests and shellfish activities in areas where SAV is expected to spread. At the present time, leased oyster grind can be dredged, which may impact SAV that's expanded into existing leases. Furthermore, the proposed set-aside area would not exclude the harvesting of shellfish. However, all existing marine resources laws and regulations would still apply. Based on the eelgrass success and the expected expansion into other unassigned areas of state bottom that could be leased for oyster grind, staff recommends approval of the proposed SAV set-aside areas in Cobb Bay for approximately 805 acres and in South Bay for approximately 963 acres for a period of 5 years. Staff also believes that the set-aside area should provide for the continued success of the Seaside SAV and Bay Scallop restoration efforts. That's pretty much all I have, and a lot of that's a repeat from October, but I'll be happy to answer any questions. I believe there's a few people that may want to speak on both sides.
I suspect there will be. Questions from the Commission? Mr. Erskine.
Are there actual existing regulations that would prohibit the planting of shellfish in SAV areas? I mean, current, not prospective areas that would have SAV, but currently would have SAV in them. Do the regulations allow for that prohibition currently?
Not the leasing of it. You're talking about if they already have a lease.
I'm talking about.
They want to plant on top of SAV.
Correct.
They can dredge it at this point. Matter of fact, I think Dr. Orth, I don't know if he has any pictures, but there's some donut holes in South Bay in SAV areas. So I know that they can dredge. I think there is some question if we have a regulation that's beefed up enough to stop somebody from planting on top of SAV.
Yes, sir.
As a follow-up, I'm only familiar really with the general permit for under the commission that would allow for placing structures, cages, that kind of stuff, that there's an extensive process that an applicant has to go through, one of which is determining where SAV currently is. And it goes before the staff whether or not SAV would colonize that area where cages are proposed to go.
In the fisheries regulation.
In the fisheries regulation, right. I guess when you said there's dredging that's allowed, that's in on public ground.
Existing.
That would be...
Existing lease ground.
Okay.
Sorry, I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
If you have an existing lease, you can get a permit to dredge that lease. And SAV, unfortunately, the way our law enforcement looks at this is not much we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons we're trying to set this area aside so that that doesn't happen in the future. If somebody leases an area in here that's vacant, that falls inside of three or four, it doesn't have any SAV on it now. We would normally lease it. SAV we know is going into these areas, or if we think it is, and then down the road, they could potentially get a permit to dredge it, even though it has SAV on it. That may be a shortfall of our regulation.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Batcher. Sure. Does anyone in the audience wish to address the commission here on the merits of this proposal in favor of this set aside? Yes, please come forward. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Bo Lusk, Jr., and I'm the coastal scientist with the Nature Conservancy's Virginia Coast Reserve. Thank you guys for hearing this proposal today. Virginia's Atlantic coast, its barrier islands and its coastal bays, make up a system that's composed of a mosaic, if you will, of different essential habitat types. And those types are tidal marshes, they're sandy beaches, mudflats, oyster reefs. All these things work together to ensure that we have a healthy system. As you know, though, for nearly 70 years, one of those habitat types was missing from the mosaic, from this system. That's eelgrass. But fortunately, VIMS, through a lot of efforts and with a lot of support from the Nature Conservancy, has been able to finally get that missing piece of the puzzle back. We have eelgrass on and expanding within Virginia's coastal bays. And now that we have all these pieces together, they all work together to help ensure the health and the productivity of the system. They work together to make it more resilient in the face of extreme disturbances. If we see increased warm weather events, more storms, increased frequency of tidal flooding, the fact that we have healthy habitat types all over this system, a significant enough scale and in large enough areas, they work together to help make sure that our system can efficiently adapt to all these punches that are being thrown at it. So eelgrass, as I said, is an important part of that puzzle. But even on its own, eelgrass gives us a whole lot of benefits. It can help to dampen wave energy when we have wind events. It sequesters carbon. It helps keep shifting sediments where they belong and keeps them from filling in our precious few navigable waterways that we have remaining on the seaside of Virginia. These eelgrass meadows are fish factories. They produce tons of fish. They provide habitat for foraging fish. So they're benefiting all of our commercial fisheries. They're benefiting our recreational fishermen. And really, maybe the most exciting thing of all that's going on is the promise that's been shown from VIMS's efforts to find a way to bring back the bay scallop to Virginia, something that's been missing for all these years, something that my grandmother told me about when she was a little girl. And yet all the time I spent on the seaside growing up, I never saw any bay scallops. No live ones. I saw the ruins of the shucking houses. I saw the dead ones washed up on the beach. But there's a lot of promise here. And if we can keep enough eelgrass on the seaside and large enough meadows, that are distributed spatially amongst multiple seaside bays, we may be able to see a self-sustaining scallop population back in Virginia that I and my children can see. I'm not foolish enough to think that the seaside is a static system. It's a shame that with our regulations we have to draw lines around things in order to manage different places in a system as dynamic as the seaside. These habitat types that I mentioned can move from one place to another. One habitat type can morph from one habitat into another. But for the most part, these areas that are proposed for a set-aside seem to be pretty stable right now. They appear to be, for a good long time, suitable for eelgrass to grow in. Now, if there was a big change, if one of these set-aside areas saw some shoaling that made it unsuitable for eelgrass growth, but possibly suitable for something like clam aquaculture, I would likely recommend that you revisit it and decide if you want to make changes in how that area bottom is managed. But right now, we can be pretty sure that these areas are going to be good for eelgrass propagation in the near future. And in order to ensure that we have all this grass in place for all these benefits that I've mentioned that help benefit all of our citizens, for bringing back scallops to our state, and in order to protect and ensure our continued restoration investments on the seaside, I urge you all to approve these set-asides today. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the commission? Thank you, Ms. Watson. Is anyone else here wishing in favor to testify in favor of the set-aside proposal? You hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
Robert North. I'm a professor at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science and have been the lead investigator in the restoration of eelgrass in these coastal bays since 1997. I'll just add a few things to what Hank did in terms of a very, very nice presentation. It's very rare where any of us have an opportunity to see a system come back and reestablish itself as we have seen in these seaside coastal bays. You know, when we look at what's going on at the Chesapeake Bay, it's a totally different story. But what we have in the seaside is an opportunity to really see how a system reverts back to what it was back, you know, in the early 1900s. And again, a unique opportunity, and as Mr. Lust said, you know, we like to work with the commission that while this is a request for a set-aside for 5 years, I think we've been very good at trying to present an annual presentation as to what's happening with SAB, not just in the Chesapeake Bay, but also these coastal bays. And again, I think that positive interaction with you all and the staff is something that I think we pride ourselves on. Again, this is an opportunity that presents itself once in a lifetime to individuals, and you all are sitting here watching what happens. We, again, see these things change very rapidly. We are certainly interested in these set-asides because, again, you know, we have seen some recent dredging in some of these bays and some of those leases with this modified oyster dredge. And if you recall, we had placed a sanctuary in Chincoteague Bay, which, again, I'll report upon in my February report. But we have seen that in these coastal bays, and we're hoping that, you know, we can look carefully at preventing this from destroying whatever beds are there. But again, with the results that we've had so far with the scallop work, and as Mr. Lusk said, you know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. We have something in front of us that, you know, we could see in our lifetime the possibility of a sustainable bay scallop population. And again, who knows where it's going to go, but again, that opportunity is in front of us, and I'm hoping that you'll work with us in this step-by-step process. And again, my promise is, as I've had in the past, I don't know how many years coming before you on an annual basis, basically tell you how it's going and get your approval in terms of the continuation of the work that we're doing here.
Dr. Worth, I have a quick question here. There has been some pretty dramatic, as I understand here, improvements to the bay scallop resource in that neck of the woods through your SAB restoration efforts.
That's correct.
Can you speak a little bit more on that?
Well, okay, so what we've been doing, and Dr. Welkenbach has been in charge of that bay scallop program, have been to, well, first of all, these are some of the historical numbers that are from the harvest of bay scallops back in the 20s, and these are commercial data. And as Hank mentioned, after the storm of 33 and the loss of yield bay scallops harvested commercially in these coastal bays since that time. And while you can see the evidence of these bay scallops in shells and shell middens and the houses that were there, there have been no harvested bay scallops in the seaside bays since 1932. Just as an interesting aside, I had a colleague that found a couple comments that were from the 1900s in newspapers. Richmond Times-Dispatch, catching and shucking of scallops from the seaside was tried as an experiment the past week. They sold readily in New York for $1.50 a gallon, and large shipments were asked for. They have been regarded as worthless. Well, if you think about what $1.50 per gallon is back then, you're looking at between $30 to $40 per gallon in today's dollars. And then at 1917, the run of low tides this past week bring to market great quantities of scallops, which were readily sold at $2 to $2.50 per gallon. That's a high price for something way back in that 1900 time period. So, you know, what we've been doing, of course, to do the bay scallops, and again, Mark's staff has been the leader in that, but we work very closely, has been to take bay scallops that they spawn in their lab, and then we put them in these cages, allow them to basically spawn naturally in the cages, and by having them close together ensures better fertilization. And from that, we've been looking at, you know, again, how many scallops are in these beds, whether they're small or large. Again, as a scientist, our job is to basically tell you how many scallops are out there based on the production of the juveniles. And again, as Mr. Badger said, when we look at the numbers of scallops that we've seen over the last 3 years, and these are abundances that we've seen, is that from 2012 to 2014, that number has just spiked considerably. So we're hoping that we're on the front edge, the cusp of, you know, the possibility of the return of the bay scallops. So again, these are not big numbers, but they're certainly encouraging numbers that the opportunity to bring back a resource may be right at our fingertips.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
Dr. Worth, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what you think the factors are that contributed to this restoration that's currently, you know, taking place where the set-aside areas currently are.
Yes, sir. Well, what we discovered is that the reason why eelgrass never returned is that the fact that these bays were isolated, the likelihood of a eelgrass seed, because these are angiosperms, they produce seeds, the likelihood of a seed getting there naturally is close to zero. So all we did was do what you might do when you build a house and want a lawn, you put seed. And so we essentially seeded, you know, these coastal bays, and from that point, nature basically did the rest. The reason why I think these bays are seeing an enhancement of eelgrass compared to the Chesapeake are for two reasons. One is that these bays have a much greater circulation and are closer to the Atlantic Ocean, which brings in cooler water. So during the tidal cycle, you know, we'll see a shift of temperature between 5 and 10 degrees Fahrenheit that I think really are important for the beds because, you know, this is a cool temperate species. And the Chesapeake Bay, while it's warming, I think the fact is that these bays are big, they're broad, they're shallow, and with the influx of the cooler Atlantic water, I think that keeps these beds in a much more healthy environment. And again, they're basically they're just big bowl where these plants spread naturally. And again, these bays, I mean, you can walk across from one end to the other. They're pretty shallow. So the way these plants spread is they produce seeds and these flowering shoots that break off, and they just kind of float around and drop their seeds, sort of like broadcasting the seeds that you do on lawn. But nature has done it really well. And again, as Hank said, we put in around 400 acres, and that has spread naturally to well over 4,000 to 5,000 acres at present. So the success rate of just in kind of inoculating the bays has been pretty impressive. And we're continuing that. There are some areas that are not growing as quickly because there are some other stories that are involved in that, but we are continuing to seed areas that are coming more along slowly. But it's indeed a project that, again, you know, where we were in 97 when we did not see a single blade of grass, now there's one big continuous bed. It's pretty impressive, considering all the negative stuff you hear about Chesapeake Bay.
Thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Thanks, Dr. Roy.
Sure. I'll be here for the rest of the hearing.
Okay. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify in favor of this set-aside proposal? You're already sworn in. Thank you.
I'd just like to make a few comments. First, VIMS is very supportive of the aquaculture industry on the shore. We've had much to do with the development of that. We're very mindful of the concerns expressed by Mike Osterlin and shellfish growers. I would actually suggest that the point of the set-aside is not so much that the grass is going to be there. It's going to grow. That this is already successful and it's already expanding. The scallops, we're going to make it or not make it. This is a management tool, I think, that helps the fisheries side of the house on leasing, because I know we deal with them all the time, and somebody's applied for a lease. Well, is there SAB there? There's a few sprigs or something, or there's potential. You got a request at least at one point, an application came in from Cherrystone for an adjacent area in Cherrystone Creek. And the discussion was, well, we sometimes see grass there. So part of it, and those areas that you saw on those maps are areas that either in the pie diagram showed it, eelgrass is already beginning to spread, or one of them, section 4, we think it's going to spread there. So it's basically a tool, if you will, both for the leasing decision and for enforcement. And Dr. Worth brought up the other issue, recently seeing dredge scars in these beds. And I want to touch on that a little bit more, because as Mr. Erskine pointed out with his questions, if you have a lease and you want to do aquaculture on it, put structures down, you're going to go through a process to get that permitted. But if you've got lease bottom out there, and there are places that people do on the seaside, places that they have historically leased solely for the purpose of dredging up resources that were there. And that's what this issue is with the modified oyster dredge going around and around in a circle and digging really deeply into the bottom. We've studied that in the past with them on unvegetated bottoms out there, and very destructive. And so my understanding set aside, again, is a tool to help BMRC and their guidance about where to lease and where not to lease there, and not having to struggle with, well, it might grow there or it might not. In response to your commission's request last year, this effort was undertaken to say, where do we really think it's going to spread versus where it's not? I don't think this is about as much about we've got to have more acres for SAV, or we've got to have more acres for scallops. Now, certainly what Mr. Love said, it adds to some of the resilience, but it's really in response to this commission's request to say, where's your best knowledge of where it's going to spread? And I think this provides guidance not just to whether to set aside for SAV restoration, but where to not plan to do it.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission?
I did have a question. This, my understanding in this proposal is this would be set aside areas that are currently unassigned ground. It's unassigned oyster ground. So I think we've demonstrated that if it's a cage application or operation under a general permit in fisheries, there would be a process to determine if there's SAV in the area. But being unassigned ground, if there were an individual that said, I want to lease that ground, that lease application would have to go before the commission as well and be reviewed, and the commissioner or the commission or staff would have the ability to say that area is inappropriate for leasing due to these factors.
That's correct. You could pull those same factors up and do it on a case-by-case basis, is my understanding. Probably more appropriate for someone today.
And I just had a follow-up as well. The size of these areas seems, I mean, it's 800-900, it's about 1,700 acres or more. Why the such a large area? I know in the past the commission has approved maybe 50 acres or a couple hundred acres or something like that. It seems to be a much larger area.
The answer to why is I think this was in response to a request from the commission of, can you identify the areas that are appropriate, which is where you think SAV is going to spread. This program began, one of the things we're missing in the history, the earliest part of the history of the Eelgrass planting over there, the commission actually set aside an area, sort of, and named VIMS as who they were setting aside to do that restoration. It was kind of a VIMS project. Subsequent to that, it became clear this is not a VIMS project, it's a management issue. Yeah, they're not set aside for us. The set aside does not necessarily mean that any seed will be planted there. Again, it's not being asked to set aside that area so that somebody can go actively seed it. It may get seeded or not. Somebody has got to seed that. Maybe that exceeds the amount of area that we've ever seeded in 15 years. It helps identify for you the areas that we both are seeing eelgrass spread, where we think it's going to spread, so that you can manage it on a case-by-case basis, or use that guidance that's recommended by the staff and just draw some bounds and say we're not going to release it. That's where I think that's the area comes from. It's not an acre target that the restoration scientists think they need to add. It's where the grass is going to go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? Dr. Orth, you have your hand up here since we're still in the proponent time allotment.
The first set aside request was in South Bay, and it was, fairly significant. It was 500 to 600 acres, and then we subsequently went to increase that, and then we went to a request for Hog Island Bay. So the numbers of acres that we've requested are fairly large, but I think the key is that the amount of area that is being requested is still a very small proportion of the available bottom that's out there. It's only 5% more. And again, having spent 15 years of my life there going back and forth and in those beds, these are areas that I think are going to be most likely to support grass. When we came up with these diagrams, we tried to be very careful and cognizant of, as Mark said, we tried to be careful of the aquaculture concerns. And that, of course, is always there because VIMS has always supported that. So we want to be very cautious and recognize the aquaculture component. Most of these areas are subtidal and at present probably wouldn't be available for clams because most clam aquaculture is sort of intertidal. A lot of the areas are fairly exposed or somewhat muddy that maybe they wouldn't do oyster aquaculture. Again, having seen these bottoms firsthand because we check all these areas, we're starting to see some spread in these areas. And again, this just gives us that opportunity to protect, these areas that we're going to see significant enhancement. Again, we were very cautious. I mean, we worked with the coastal zone staff to make sure that this was our best estimate of where it would occur, but not where it wouldn't occur. So we're not taking bottom that we have pretty certainty it's not going to grow.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to address the commission who's in favor of setting aside this acreage? Anyone opposed? Yes, sir. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got?
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Kim Husky, Director of the Virginia Seafood Council. Members of the Virginia Seafood Council are in opposition to this set-aside, whereas we appreciate and applaud the efforts by VIMS for the expansion of these eelgrass and the expansion of the bay scallops. We do strongly believe that the commission already has the authority to deny any lease applications for whatever reason should SAVs ever be determined to be on the grounds to be leased. I don't want to belabor any more of your time because I have two industry members here that would like to speak to it from an industry point of view. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Someone else? Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got? Please state your name for the record.
And Gallivan. Well, I'm here to represent I'm the CEO of a large, medium-large seaside aquaculture company. I'm also personally the owner of a small aquaculture company on the seaside. I'm opposed to the eelgrass just taking up such large tract of on assigned lease bottoms just for the fact to take it up that it might be suitable for eelgrass. Our industry is growing. It's reaching close to $100 million, and it continues to grow. One of the biggest limiting factors is getting ground, especially on the seaside. As a scientist said, that it's a very dynamic, narrow band of land, and there's only certain areas that are available for shellfish growing. We feel that because it's so dynamic, it changes a lot, and setting aside such huge tracts of land for even 5 years would be detrimental for us. We agree completely with what Kim said. We have the utmost respect for the resources of eelgrass and the bay scallop coming back, but there are tools in place and protections by BLMRC that this doesn't happen. I personally have been denied certain grounds because of eelgrass, but then in a couple years later, when things have changed, then somebody else actually took up the ground, and it's currently, in commercial ground. I noticed in Hog Island, where I work with an affiliate company, where the ground that was set aside, the couple hundred acres that was set aside for eelgrass, there's a certain percentage that is growing successfully eelgrass, but there's also a good portion that has turned into a sea mountain bar very quickly that is, not currently great for growing eelgrass, and it doesn't look like it's going to continue to go that way for the way that the sand is shifting, but would be excellent for shellfish aquaculture. So again, briefly, I am opposed to setting aside large tracts of seagrass for eelgrass without any stipulations to the industry or returning it to on sun lease bottom. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
And do you foresee any compromise? Is it the sheer number of acres that's requested to set aside? Is there something that would be a better, in your opinion, different approach that would allow for some aspect of set aside, or is it that you disagree with the set aside period?
I apologize. I don't know how much of an industry input for these two big tracts were put in. I don't know if they've talked to industry at all. I do know that it's very dynamic out there, and it does shift in both directions, and the industry as well as all of that. If there's more stipulations or a quicker turnaround, or if they were coming back and saying, oh, over here we took up this large track, but it's actually shifted and it's turning into, so we're going to turn this number of acres back in, if it was more of a back and forth dialogue. Again, I think BLMRC has great protection, and there are tools in place to protect the eelgrass and bay scallops. But yes, I think if there are stipulations in there, for quicker.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? Thank you. Anyone else here wish to testify? Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, help you God? Thank you. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Heather Lusk. I'm with HM Terry Company on the Eastern Shore. We are a clam and oyster aquaculture company. And, I just want to reiterate what Kim Husky said and what Ann said. I don't think there's anybody in this room that would argue that eelgrass is not important on the seaside, but our concern as a company is that when you take up these large tracts of land for eelgrass restoration, they're unavailable forever because we don't see a mechanism by which the seaside is a very dynamic place. It changes from storm to storm. We see that in our own ground, and so our concern is that we're taking up, this is 1,700 plus acres of ground that was previously available to be leased, perhaps, that is totally off the table. And we feel like the VMRC does have tools by which they can review lease applications to determine if eelgrass is present, and that those are good tools. But we certainly appreciate the value of eelgrass, and I don't think that is the issue. So we're opposed to taking up these large tracts without any mechanism for adjusting them based on the change in the
group. The recommendation is to set aside for a period of 5 years, at which point it would be reevaluated. I
mean, you can go back on a yearly basis and things are totally changed. Ann spoke about the area in Hog Island Bay that was set aside for eelgrass, and I think that there's a portion of that that has been very successful, but there's about 40 or 50 acres that's now a sandbar, which is not appropriate for eelgrass, but it would be very appropriate for clam aquaculture. And there's not a mechanism at this point for us to say, you know, for that to be released or for there to be any dialogue about that, it doesn't seem. So the seaside is, things happen on from storm to storm, really. So 5 years, I think, is actually a bit of a long period of time.
Okay. Questions from the commission? Anyone else? Ms. Fasher, would you like to summarize and to expand?
Just one comment. Just like a set-aside area for clamming and so forth, the commission to have an area with inside of the set-aside clamming or whatever to be released, and that would be brought in front of the commission, and they could do that at any time. And that includes the clam grants, too.
That's a good point. Dr. Worth, really quickly, please, and please make it very pertinent.
Gentlemen, we map these areas every single year, so we have good aerial photography to see how stable these particular locations. And, yes, there are some places that are very unstable, but the beds that we've been the areas that we've been working in have been relatively stable for these last 15 years since we started the project. And even when we've had severe storms and heat events, these beds have basically remained in that general area and, have expanded those areas that you saw in those pictures. So that's just okay. And, again, we continue to do the aerial photography, so we will have very good records of where these areas are. And if there are changes in the commission is interested in an area that does show, you know, that is something that is certainly amenable to removing from the set aside, if it shows.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Wood. The public hearing is now closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Who would like to start? Mr. Erskine.
I'd like to make a comment. I appreciate everybody's comments in the public hearing, and both for and against. I think it does go without saying that this resource is important. And, you know, as Mr. Lusk pointed out in the beginning, this is a mosaic that we deal with in the bay and on the seaside. And part of that mosaic is certainly eelgrass. Another aspect is shellfish, along with, you know, the bay scallops that have been restored. And so it's a great success story, and I commend the efforts of restoring this area. I'm a little bit intrigued about the idea that it would be set aside for a certain period of time, and if that set aside area showed some growth in eelgrass, but part of it was not productive, would there be a mechanism to be able to return that area to being leased? I understand what's in front of us here is 5 years. I think we've heard as well that these are dynamic areas, and annually this kind of shifts and varies. I guess I come down on this is important, an important issue that goes just beyond this set-aside area that's in front of us today. I think there might be discussion about a smaller area as well as a smaller time period, so it could be revisited. And I would make that comment. I'm not prepared to make a motion, but...
Okay. Mr. Cedar.
I recognize both sides of this, and I appreciate all the speakers. I think probably what I didn't know, and maybe most of these people out here don't know, is that if we have a shoaling area, as was mentioned, that the public can go petition the board here and say, hey, look, you got to set this aside for X, and that ain't happening, and we've got sand here, and so exit's not happening, and now I want to lease that. I think maybe the public doesn't realize that they can do that. And then one of the questions I kind of had was, has the commission ever released land that it set aside, even though it knows that you know, it's not being productive as the commission said it was going to be?
I mean, Mr. Badger can answer that question. Mr. Zedrin?
Up in Chincoteague, probably 15 years ago, they petitioned an area to be taken out of the public planning ground, and they wanted to lease it. We've had discussions, and there may even be an application now for just something like that. What they've done is they've applied, and that will eventually be in front of you. And that's right on this side of the bed.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
And if we have that in place, then I think the watermen here are protected, because if they know that, and just like one of the ladies talked about, well, you know, she had put in an application for a particular area. At that time, the commission said no, it was denied. And then later, when it was revisited that the purpose of the commission was not being met, then someone else went over there and actually leased that land. So I think if the word's out there is that if we're cognizant of the waterman's need out there and see that the land's not being productive for the reason that we put it aside, then I think we should, as a commission, have a recommendation from staff, say, look, this thing's shoveled up, we need to cut this one out. And that would kind of help with this massive reserve that we're talking about, the 1,700 acres. Because if the public knows that if it's not going to be productive, we're going to cut it back out, that would be very beneficial for the watermen. So I would be in favor of that understanding what the staff just said.
Ms. Haney.
It does seem to me to be a large number of acreage to set aside. And I was just wondering, out of the four areas in conversation, it was mentioned that we knew eelgrass was going to grow in certain areas and we thought it would grow in other areas. Out of those four, do certain areas show more potential than others?
Mr. Ratcher, can you help with that question?
I've
closed the public hearing on this. So I'd rather have the answers come from staff if necessary, but we'll turn to experts if we need to.
I think you better turn to experts.
Okay. Well, then that's what we shall do.
Well, I think the answer then to Stanley's question is this is the part of set aside to the percentage of it that already has the grass in it. So, and three has much less. And four had none on the last survey. I believe one was probably shown on the previous slide. There's some already in one. Again, this effort was undertaken not to look for more acres per se, or to set any arbitrary restoration goal. It was undertaken at the request of the commission to try to better identify grasses might spread. But the simple answer to your question is, well, certainly two has already got a significant proportion of it. It's this up here. It's in grass. Three's got a little bit. And you can see where these beds are. I too have spent a lot of time out here. And the restoration efforts took place significantly more to the east. And they've been growing that way aggressively. This is certainly this is further away from the sort of epicenter of that. And it's just because, primarily because it's the right sediment type and the grass is right at the border. It's our expectation that it's just going to grow that way.
A follow-up question?
Yes, Sandy.
For area 3 and 4, which currently have little or none, would there be a possibility of revisiting those areas at another time? at a later time versus?
We, well, as my course said, we do the surveys, the lab does it every year. So we do the, these are, so you'll have new year's data the next year. There's a possibility of revisiting all of it at a later time when there's new data. And it might be a pleasure.
Thank you.
Anyone else on the commission? Well, I got a couple points I think I'd like to make. It seems to me at the heart of this here, we're being asked to balance restoration and the ecological services that are being provided by this SAV expansion and the potential perhaps for someday for a lucrative bay scallop fishery, balancing that versus the clam aquaculture industry's potential future needs, that this ground is unleased now is telling to me it's unassigned ground. We've had a run over the last year and a half on lease applications to lease water bottoms. Our normal rate is 80 to 85, maybe 90 new applications a year. And last year, it was 338 applications. People are laying claim to lots of water bottoms for the purposes of shellfish harvesting or production or aquaculture. No applications have come in for these particular set-aside spots. Kind of tells me that at this point, they're not really ripe for that kind of use. So that's why I characterize this as a balance between potential future aquaculture needs. I think Mr. Batcher's point about being able to petition the commission to set aside or remove from a set aside because of changes the character of the water bottom is kind of telling. It says to me that we have options down the road here to relook at some of this with a simple petition from somebody who wishes to carve some of the set-aside out for aquaculture use. That this is a five-year proposal kind of sets us a timeline on when to revisit it, and, of course, the commission can revisit it in the meantime ever since, in before the 5 years is up. So all that said is I'm kind of leaning in favor of this. Yes, sir, Erskine.
I appreciate, you know, the perspective, and again, I don't disagree with the importance of the project and the restoration efforts that have been realized thus far, but I do think it's important to note that we have a current system that prohibits planting and cultivating in SAV colonized areas. This is prospective looking down the road, how many ever years that SAV, eelgrass in particular, may very well colonize this area. But if it does colonize the area, the following year it may very well be removed for one reason or the other, environmental conditions or storm events or whatever. So I think it's a little bit overreaching, and I'm not against setting something aside, but I just think four specific areas, at least what I'm looking at, two of which have zero, if any, SAV in it currently, I think limits the uses that could take up this ground. I believe the majority of the leases that we've seen it applied for are bayside leases, not necessarily on the eastern shore. There have been certainly some on the eastern shore, but not necessarily concentrated on the seaside. So I appreciate we've had a rise in the number of applications, but most of those are in the bay where you don't see as many SAV issues. Having said that, you know, I understand the importance of it, but I think we need to be careful about just setting aside 1,700 acres, especially with the tools we currently have to protect SAV.
Mr. Seeger.
Well, I concur with what Mr. Erskine says. You know, we can revisit this at any time, okay? And as you said, those are unassigned areas. There's nothing happening. There's no grass in there. So why set it aside? I mean, I would move that we approve sites 1 and 2 and not 3 and 4 And next year, as the gentleman from BIM says, they do an annual assessment. And if they find that the eelgrass now is all over four, then we can set that aside next year. But I would like to say, concur with Mr. Erskine and say, look, the one and two, it's got an established growth in there. It's more than a probability that it's going to continue to grow. And that's a significant amount. I don't know what the acreage is on one and two, but whatever that is, it is. And then next year we can look at three and four and see what staff recommends as to whether we include that or not. So my motion would be to approve parcels one and two only.
Is there a second?
Comment?
Please.
Would you be willing to maybe change the revisiting from 5 years to a 1 or 2 year?
Yes, the gentleman from BIMS here said they look at it every year. So why can't we have a look at it every year after they do and get some recommendations there? That would give us a lot more flexibility. So I would add to my motion that it be reviewed annually.
Can I make comments?
Please.
I guess the point of this whole thing is not to protect where grass is now. It's to protect where grass can be. And we can always unset it aside. But once that area is leased, how easy is it to take it away from the lease?
Okay.
And so the whole point of this is not to protect grass now, it's to protect potential grass. And so if we don't set this aside and then we lease it next month and then grass grows in there, it's gone. Then the whole point of that is that the lease, that grass can be dredged up. It has no. We have taken away our ability to protect this potential spread of grass, and so that's what the scientists are telling us, is that these areas are valuable potential areas for the restoration of eelgrass and the restoration of the bay scallops, and then if we lease it, then we've got a problem, and we've taken away that potential. And so, setting it aside for 5 years and seeing what happens, to me, seems very reasonable, particularly with the potential of restoring an industry that's been lost to us since 1933. And that would be a very valuable industry to restore to the state of Virginia. So to me, I'm just not seeing a disadvantage of setting this area aside for a few years. And even though it says in 5 years, it means we have to revisit in 5 years. It doesn't say we can't revisit it in 2 months. We can revisit this anytime at any meeting. And so I'm seeing disadvantages of losing this land to potential restoration of eelgrass and scallops, but I'm not seeing a disadvantage of setting it aside. It's not saying it can't be leased later, but once it's leased,
well, and I understand where you're coming from, and I think there are mechanisms to forego leasing in the area and not this commission not allow leases, knowing what we know, that the science may tell us that there are some areas like number two, for example, that currently have SAB in it, and it's reasonable to think it would expand to that area, number two.
What is that mechanism? We had how many lease applications this last year?
338.
And how many of those were actually brought to this commission?
53 are protested. We will hear some of them.
Okay. And so I guess what is VMRC staff, how can they say, no, you can't lease this because eelgrass might grow here?
In the code, there's broad discretion for the commissioner to refuse leases. Certainly one of those would be the either present SAB population or the future SAB population. So that ability is there, clearly there in the code currently to do that. I'd also say Mr. Zedron's recommendation would be for over 1,300 acres of the 1,700 acres that would be set aside. It's the two largest areas that we'd be talking about. As much as we get a proposal or a presentation every year about where SAV is in the bay and on the seaside, I don't know that presentation also gives us where has the SAV left. for example, in a set-aside area of 200 acres, maybe 100 of it's colonized with SAV, but do we get a presentation that says, well, this area has shoaled up and it's no longer has SAV in it, and therefore we would recommend not only would these areas be available for SAV set-aside, but this should be reverted back to leasable on assigned ground.
And I think we should get that. And I think it's rude if we ask for that, if we don't.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that is true.
So we have a motion on the table by Mr. Zedron to set aside sites 1 and 2. Mr. Zedron, did you have a time limit on that?
I think we can go with the 5 years as indicated, but we should have a report annually to update us on the progress.
So that's kind of an amended motion here.
Right.
Is there a second?
I'd second the motion for discussion, and if I could ask if that motion would also include the report, annual report, that would designate areas that have SAV and may have the potential and also no longer have SAV in them.
Yeah, I would include that in the motion.
That would be a friendly amendment to your motion here. So report annually on acreage that is not successful that has been set aside for eelgrass restoration. Correct.
I guess I would prefer to see, you know, something that would be a recommendation for a certain area that may no longer have SAV in it that would go back to VMRC for assignment.
Permanently amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion along this line?
Can I ask staff a question?
Sure.
If it's approved to set aside for 5 years and there's a report annually, does it preclude the commission from opening or changing that set aside area on an annual basis?
I think with regard to the commission's discretion to open or close or remove set-asides, the commission has quite a bit of flexibility. So I think if an area is set aside and we say it's set aside for 5 years, knowing that we're going to revisit that in 5 years, and that's what that target is for, we think that that's a foreseeable, manageable time frame to understand expectations of staff, and the public understands those expectations. But if something came up in the interim that warranted additional review, I think the commission has that flexibility. But I think, you know, one important thing here from a staff perspective with regard to the 5 years is it was a reasonable amount of time to see what was going to happen given the progression of SAV in these bays. And it recognizes that if we don't set these areas aside and we just do it on a case-by-case basis with regard to applications, we're utilizing a lot of resources to review those. The public has certain expectations about what will happen with their lease request. They put time and capital and energy into seeking those applications, and the staff spends time reviewing that as well as bringing it to the commission if we don't think it should be leased based on either presence of SAV or potential for SAV. And this, I think, set aside, as Mr. Neal characterized it, is certainly where we think there is the potential for SAV based on the evidence that VIMS has provided and the evaluation of the conditions that are out there. And so, as a result, we thought the 5 years was an appropriate amount of time to, you know, have this in that status, not to say the commission doesn't have flexibility in the interim to deal with it otherwise, but at least it gives everyone a reasonable expectation of what can be expected during that time period. So, yeah, bottom line is we have some flexibility, but we set this aside for a purpose, and that's to provide expectation and some understanding of what the commission's perspective is on the value of this area.
Thank you.
Just got another comment.
Mr. Caesar,
My understanding is that none of these areas are going to be aggressively planted at all. We're just going to take and let it grow naturally. Is that correct?
I will answer that, and if VIMS wishes to add, they may want to because they may not get it quite right. We think that based on the evidence, these areas represent areas where SAB has expanded based on the ongoing restoration efforts out there and the natural progression and migration of the SAB throughout the area. I think VIMS, and I don't want to speak for them, but they continue their restoration efforts over there. I don't think, to my knowledge, these 1, 2, 3, or 4 were targeted for seed, but that's where I would defer to them to see if they actually had planned seed in those areas.
Okay, I'd like to have an answer to that.
Where we were going to put the seeds, and Dr. Orth can speak to that as well. But what we really represent is how we've seen this bed move, and also that we've managed in 15 years to put about how many acres planted out there? Maybe 40, less than 40 acres.
Yeah. All of the initial planting was in this set aside, so all of the grass that you see in the light green has been field grass that has spread naturally. And while some of these areas are not mapped, some of our on-the-ground surveys are showing small patches of field grass actually throughout these areas. So the likelihood of 2, 3, and 4 being vegetated in the next 5 years is as close to 100% as I can give you, because, again, we're starting to see lots of little patches throughout, and again, this is the baler grounds. It's happening, and our intent was to actually do some seeding because, again, this is really tied to the scallop project. You know, we've got to have a lot of yield grass. We're talking about multiple sites of putting these bay scallops out. That because the bay scallop has a very short life cycle, we want to put as many scallops in these cages in as many in several areas. So the more yield grass we have, the more likely we're going to have potential for sustainable populations. And again, we would have never expected the eelgrass to actually occur down in these areas, but again, nature has been surprising us at every turn of the corner, and that, again, from our intensive ground surveys, because our mapping is patches as small as maybe half a square meter, but we do the on-the-ground surveys to better understand how these plants are spreading. And so, as I said, you know, there are patches of grass throughout here. We found small patches way down this corner here that, again, we've been quite surprised, again, how quickly these plants spread when they're not challenged by the water quality conditions that we see in Chesapeake Bay. And the water quality of these coastal bays is excellent. And again, that's contributing to the rapid spread of these plants. And because it's very shallow, these are shallow bays, 3 to 4 feet, I mean, low water.
Ms. Hurst.
Can I just ask a question? The light green, and to the most northerly part of that picture is the current outlined in blue, is where restoration work was done. That's a set aside, if I understand currently. That's a
set aside that the commission gave us. That when we started this work in large yieldgrass plots in 2001, and then we had an additional request that gave us this piece because it was spreading here, and we felt that, again, it was important to have as much area just because this stuff spreads pretty quickly. It's happening. I mean, this is a pretty large area. There are a lot of areas that don't because there's a lot of intertidal areas that, again, as we've heard, there's some shifting sand bottoms in these intertidal areas, and we've seen those. But most of the areas that we've seen grass has been relatively stable. So, again, when we talk about these areas, and again, there's sandwiched between baler grounds. I mean, this is baler ground, this is baler ground, this is the leased area. So when we looked at it, we were trying to attach the set-aside as close to the baler grounds as we could. And again, because they didn't have grass, but my expectation, knowing what I've seen for the last 15 years, and again, we spent a lot of time over there with our face in the water and have been really quite surprised at how quickly these are spreading to these areas.
I guess my question is, to the south of that blue outline current set-aside, seems like there's a lot of light green area that currently has SAV in it that is not protected. It's not a set-aside. Wouldn't it be more prudent to protect the areas that currently have SAV in them?
Well, you could, but I think, as you said, the issue here is that since it has existing grass, the likelihood of, as far as I know, the commission would not lease an area that has existing extensive existing grass. And we work very closely with the commission when leases come up regarding the presence or absence of any SAB, whether it's Chesapeake Bay or in these coastal bays. So these areas basically would be at present protected anyway, because they have quite a bit of grass. And again, one of the things, I mean, we're willing to work with you in any way, shape, or form to make this process appropriate for you and answering your questions. So there are things that we can do. Again, we set a map every year. Some of the maps, we can't see small patches, but we can go to these areas and do random surveys, you know, diver surveys to see whether there is grass already colonized. And as I said, we've seen that in these general areas here. And as you said, in two, there's quite a bit of grass actually growing in number two already that we haven't mapped because we can't see it. And again, all this is, to me, you know, when we work with you all, you know, again, coming to you on an annual basis, it's our intention to keep you abreast of everything we do so that you're informed and being able to make the right decision. So through our annual presentation that I make, you know, we can keep this as an update as I have in the past few years. Supposed to do that in February, but we've already been talking about it. It's up front to keep that presentation to what's going on in Chesapeake Bay. But you know, this is fairly accurate as to what we're seeing with regard to this particular bay.
All right, well, we have a motion on the table here by Mr. Cedar here to set aside areas 1 and 2 for 5 years with an annual report requirement.
As both the growth and what Mr. Erskine said, the non-productive as well.
Right. Successful and unsuccessful, I guess, is another way of looking at it. That's the second by Mr. Erskine. Discussion on the motion. I'll call the question then. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Noes?
Nope.
Chair votes aye. There's a reasonable compromise here. The motion passes 6-1. Thank you very much, and I appreciate everybody's input, expertise, and the civility that was shown throughout all this. Thank you.